This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
When I start with a nice word, I'm going to start Zriya. Like the Shaslaivi, Hadik B'dech Beruv, says in the Pusik Ishik Sazriya, Yol the Zuchar. He says that there are two ways that Hashem is Mashpia, Shefa, on this world. Sometimes it's when Hashem is just doing it on his own, because Hashem is a Zonah Mefarnes, and Hashem is a Tevimaitiv, making sure that we have whatever we need. And sometimes it's actually coming with what's called an Asarisid Lasata, where people are being zoicha to the Shefa, they're being mo'oirer by Hashem, the Rutzen, to be Mashpia. And he says it's obviously a much stronger Hashpua and a much longer lasting Hashpua when people are zoicha on their own. They're actually being mo'oirer, the Shefa that Hashem wants to give. He says, Isha kisa zrivi al zuchar, Isha is maramz of the makabel. If the makabel is the one that is first being mo'oirer, the Hashpua, then the yol de zuchar, the Hashpua that comes, is a stronger Hashpua, blushan zuchar. It's a Hashpua that is sustainable and something that Hashem wants to give much stronger and more willingly. And I think this is something that we see, you know, machisa daraka, machisa derakia. I mean, we see this in our world when somebody's giving something and he's giving it because he wants to give it, or he's giving it because he has to give it. So often people get stuck on, but you're supposed to do this, it's your job, right? Either because you're the father, or because you're the mother, or because you're the husband or wife or whatever. This is what you have to do. Now, it's true, when somebody does something because they have to do it, that's also good. And people should do what they have to do. And when people don't do what they have to do, different obligations, responsibilities, it's a problem. But if you could only arouse the eager want, as Carnegie calls it, you arouse the eager want, you make someone want to do something. That's a whole different story. So I think that's just an important lesson to know how to accomplish, both in our service to Hashem and even just in our own homes, you know, the idea of Ishkiz Azir, Yol Dezuchar, to make sure that it comes better. I think we could also just apply the idea of Ishkiz Azir, Yol Dezuchar, that sometimes when somebody is not doing what they're supposed to, and they're supposed to, but they're not doing what they're supposed to, I think it's fine to arouse that, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be called the ego want, but the idea that make them do what they should do, to wait around for somebody to do something just because they're supposed to, and not know how to express or be assertive about something that you want should happen, and it's not happening, I think that's also something that many people have to learn how to do. So the fact that somebody is a zocher, or somebody is a mashpia, somebody should be fulfilling a certain obligation and taking care of things, and they're not doing it, doesn't mean that you just sit quietly and say, well, this is up to you. Sometimes it's good to know how to make these things happen in a nice way. So with that, let me read a question. Hi, I have a question I hope you can address. I'm not sure if this applies to others, as I have not seen other speakers, therapists, or rabbis target such questions. It seems that our marriage is a role reversal from others in regard to being together. My husband does not feel as much, does not need it as much as I do. In fact, it seems to me as if he's uninterested. I've discussed this with him many times, as well as with his therapist. He has anxiety and is Baruch Hashem on the road to recovery, and this doesn't seem like a disorder, but rather a personality thing. He explained to me that he simply doesn't feel the need to be with me that much. This doesn't make me feel too much better. In fact, it makes me feel worse, as if I'm unattractive or something. The therapist guided us a bit and explained to me that I should value him even more because he's not in this for his personal needs, but only to make me happy. However, things get sticky when he's tired or not in the mood or forgets. My question is, how can I communicate my needs in a positive way without coming across as naggy or needy? I appreciate your time, and I truly enjoy your shiurim on Torah Anytime. Okay, thank you. So I'm just going to add another short question that came in Mamash just now, recently, maybe this past week. Normally it takes quite a bit of time to get the questions, but because it was so related, I think let me just throw it in here. Hi, this question can be addressed in either Yiddish or English. Why was being together as a couple not created with the same wanting and experience for both the husband and wife? I'm pretty much sure that this can create friction between spouses when someone is in the mood / not in the mood. If the experience would be the same for both, then it would be so much simpler. Now, I'm not questioning the way Hashem created the world. However, I've been wondering about it for a long time already. I specifically didn't reveal my gender since I want the answer to be very neutral. Thank you. Okay. You're right that you're not questioning how Hashem created the world, but you're wondering. I'm not sure what you mean to say that you're not questioning means that you're sure that Hashem did it the right way. You're just wondering why he did it that way. I assume that's the question. Okay, so let's dive straight into this. I've discussed this many times from different angles, from men, from women. I think that, you know, you say that you don't know if it applies to others and you're calling it a role reversal. It seems that it's relatively common that people have such questions in general. It's also common that people don't know where to turn with such questions, so I'm trying my best to address them responsibly and toiredik. I'm just going to mention also one more thing, just by means of introduction. You said something about your therapist guiding you to value your husband more or less. I'm just picking up on those words. Everyone has to value, everyone should value each other and respect each other and appreciate each other for whatever there is. So often, an issue comes up and you know it just blurts everything out. It just becomes the focus of attention is the difficulty that we have, the misunderstanding, the miscommunication, the differences. And yes, those things have to be addressed, and those things definitely take up a lot of place in our minds and hearts. And it's always just important to zoom in on anything good there is, even if it doesn't take away the problem, even if it doesn't weigh out the problem, even if it's a very small thing that there is, and not really what you need, and you really needed something else. It's always so important to just focus on all the good, and still address whatever it is that has to be addressed. So with that said, man, just going back to what we started with, it sounds from the questioner, and this is the way a lot of people talk about it, that this is a man-woman issue, with men being more needy and women being less needy, for example. And I think that a lot of topics when it comes to marriage are often addressed that way, right? You have men from Mars and women from Venus, and all men are like this and all women are like that. And so many people get these answers when they ask questions. Your wife is doing this because she's a woman. You don't understand. You're still new at this. Okay, husband, that's how men are. First of all, I think it's extremely exaggerated and very overdone. A lot of times it's literally stereotyping, you know, men do this, women do that. I very often I see it to be actually inaccurate, and I think it's irrelevant. I don't think it helps anyone just to know that this is what a man or woman is. Of course, those things have to be explained for those who don't understand it on a general level. You have sometimes someone who just, he has to hear that it's okay for a woman to have friends and talk on the phone because he doesn't know that. For whatever reason, he doesn't want to acknowledge it. Or it's okay for someone to know that even a man could have friends or whatever. But I don't think so many difficulties are really gender-based. I think there are many women who are just fine with this, or many men that have no problem with it, etc. I think that trying to break it down as if all men are like that, all women are like that, and that's the answer, I don't think it's accurate or helpful. I'll just start with a medrash, a very bekannte medrash, right? When Elder Demaidod were saying Nevi'a Bamachna, so the medrash says that Tzipora was there, and when she heard people saying that Ashrei Imaisayim Shel'ayli Shiroyos Benayim Nevi'im, wow, these mothers who had such wonderful children, they became Nevi'im, isn't that amazing? So Tzipora, Aishas Moshe said, yeah, Ashrei Imaisayim Aval Oyle Neshesayim. So Miriam was there, Miriam Achos Moshe Rabbani, and said, why are you saying that? She said, because from when your brother Moshe was Mekabel the Torah, Nizka Kledibri, became a Novi, Perish Mimeni. So I no longer have a husband with whom I can be close and intimate. Now, again, we're talking about Moshe Rabbani, we're talking about Tzipora, we're talking about Miriam and Aviyah, we're talking about Pel Dabar, but we're not talking about simple things. And if mothers should be happy that the sons are Neviim, you can imagine what Tzipora should have been feeling, the fact that her husband was the Aviyah Vasa Neviim. And it seems that, and the Bakan, this message brought down many times, the idea that Tzipora wasn't so happy about the fact that, you know, she was going to be alone now. Now, again, of course, we don't understand it on a simple level. This has nothing to do with us. Just the idea of a woman thinking that something wrong with her, that she needs a husband, and really, usually, it's the men that need the women, I think it's a big mistake and big exaggeration. And I don't think it's relevant. Forget about accurate. That's one. I'll also add, the fact that you say that your husband is struggling with anxiety or whatever else he's struggling with, and he has a therapist helping him, obviously this could always just play another role. So it's not necessarily a men-women thing, as much as sometimes somebody's dealing with a personal thing. That's also definitely a part of an equation. Now, just this past week, I was by a chasana, and somebody comes over to me. I'm used to having people come over to me, either to ask me a question or to give me nice regards or feedback or critique or whatever it is. But somebody comes over to me, he tells me he's been watching my shiurim for a while, until any time. And he wants to tell me that the early shiurim are the best. Now, to me, it was a chiddush because those go back a couple of years. Maybe I got better over time. I hope I get better over time. He said, in the beginning, you weren't addressing problems. You weren't addressing questions. You weren't addressing people's issues. The first 8 shiurim, on Shalom Bayis at least, and later also, you were just addressing topics. And it was so refreshing to hear clear guidance how something's supposed to be. By the time you're addressing a question and a problem and somebody's issue, so not always does somebody relate to the issue, not always does they want to apply that same guidance the person with the issue is having to a typical marriage, etc. as if typical marriages don't have issues. But the point is that there is a way that things are set up lechatchila, and it's important to know them. And whoever wants to listen, you know, for the first bunch of shirim over there, the first 8 shirim, there's a setup how relationships work. There's a setup how marriage works. There's a way that things should be. Very often, when people would only try to apply that and implement that from the beginning, it would avoid a lot of problems. But because people don't, that's why they have to either answer to a problem instead of doing things the right way. Class number 8, called the sacred, the intimate and the sacred, if I remember correctly, it was a class about giving clarity about how a Yiddish Shtiv is supposed to be set up and how a husband and wife are supposed to be together. And it's amazing to learn and to hear how Hashem set it up in a very balanced two-way street. Very balanced two-way street. Two-way street doesn't mean that I'll want you and you want me, or we'll probably both want each other. That's not the way Hashem set it up. The way Hashem set it up in the Torah is that a husband has obligations toward his wife. That's a one-way street. And the wife has obligations toward her husband. That's another one-way street. So it's technically a two-way street, but each with their own obligation and sometimes the word obligation sounds a little heavy, because it's not necessarily, you know, anything we're doing specifically because of obligation. But the idea is that each are there for the other. That's how Hashem set it up. To a point where it becomes a very severe violation if either one of them are not taking care of the other's needs. And it just goes to show the silliness of the topic that's often debated, especially between young couples sometimes, like, oh, so I'm doing this for you, you're doing this for me. It's so silly, and it's not helpful, and it often causes a lot of stress. We're in this for each other, which means that each of us, right, the husband is commanded, whether it's v'simachas ishtoi, whether it's v'ainusa le'igra, right, clearly on his end, very important chayivim, that if he violates, he's doing something very severe, and the consequences of those violations are also very severe. And same thing the other way around. A woman who, for whatever reason, is withholding from her husband being together, for whatever reason it is, a very severe thing. And again, the consequences of that are very severe. And it's not here to balance each other. Now, you would assume, based on the philosophical question that we got over here about why did Hashem set it up that way, we'll get to that in a moment, but you would assume that it should generally be a certain balance, which it isn't necessarily a balance. Hashem is talking to each individual and saying, this is how you have to do, and this is how you have to do. And I think that's so important to understand that, to understand each other's needs, to understand. Now, this is not neglecting your own needs. You're allowed to know that somebody else is responsible and obligated to take care of your needs as well. It's not a secret. On the contrary, if somebody's not doing that, then, you know, maybe you should speak up. But it was definitely set up in a very in a brilliant way, if that's the right term to use for the Eibishter's Torah and Sayyid Rachaim. We do know the issue that Shachnurich and Chazal tell us that an issue shouldn't be tavaya bepesh, she shouldn't be too explicitly clear about wanting something from her husband. But on the other hand, right, the fact that there's a oina, the fact that there's a schedule, means that she shouldn't have to. It wasn't set up. It was set up brilliantly that if only you stick to what, you know, the way it was set up originally, you know, people shouldn't be having problems. And very often, for whatever reason, over time, things get hard, and families and schedules and stress and whatever else, and things just fall out of place, and that's why you find problems. So, like this guy was telling me, you like the early shirim where things aren't addressing problems. I just wanted to mention that again. Now, talking about this philosophical question about why did Hashem set it up in a way that men and women want things differently. So till now I already addressed the fact that not all men want one thing and all women want another thing, but it is true that in many couples, in many marriages, a husband will want something more or less or a different way than a wife wants it, right? Now, that question about why Hashem would do that, and wouldn't it be simpler if everyone wanted the same thing? The answer is, yeah, of course, if we would be designing something and looking for simplicity and there would be no other cause or motive behind it, then yeah, I think we would look for the simplest design. But I think that if you look in the big picture, the general idea that Hashem is putting together people that by default are going to have different opinions, mindsets, feelings, thoughts, emotions, I mean, this is all taste, desire, this is how the world is set up. So whether you want to understand it as Hashem looking for people to work on their middos, and that's why we're getting married, and that kind of attitude toward why we have to tolerate someone else and live together with someone else, you know, that could be an answer for this question too. But whatever it is, it was definitely designed lechatchila. They're going to be marrying someone that's not yourself. Automatically, you're going to have to contend with somebody with a whole set of whatever it is, dynamics that is different than yours. Some people have it further apart. Some people have it closer. Like I spoke about last week, I think some people could tolerate differences better, some people less. But the idea that this is lechatchila is just something to keep in mind. people keep getting stuck on, so why doesn't that person want what I want, or why is it like this, or how am I supposed to do it? This is the way it's designed. This is the way it was meant to be. Somebody showed me an interesting Achpri Tviya last week from Rishla Liska, Pasha Shmini. Talks about the Bnei Aharon, Nudu Vavi, they didn't get married, Nushim Lahoy Elohim. He says, Chazal teach us that Kol Shariach Abri is Noichamani, Riach Amukum Noichamani. Whoever sees that people around him like him, are pleased by him, he's finding favor in their eyes, then it must be that Hashem is also, that he's finding favor in Hashem's eyes as well. And he says, very briefly, that this is the reason why Hashem set it up, that we should have to get married, to see if we are finding favor in someone else's eyes. Hashem wants you to know, how are you going to know if you're finding favor in Hashem's eyes? It's very easy to fool yourself and say, well, I must be a big tzaddik. And sometimes the other way around, sometimes people are too self-critical, and they think that Hashem must not be happy with them. Get married, you'll see how you get along with another person who's not yourself, right? That's part of it. You'll see if Riach Abri is Noichemani, and that will be your sign in your life mission of finding favor in Hashem's eyes. You'll figure out based on how your marriage looks. That's an interesting idea, but it's definitely something that, you know, in general, people definitely have differences, and that's how Hashem set it up. And if Hashem was looking for simple, and if Hashem's goal, if Hashem's motive was, how can we get people to work along best and not fight and not have any quarrels or differences or ever get divorced, then of course he would have set it up the way you're suggesting. But it's a good thing that Hashem didn't do that, because he has something greater in mind, where we're trying to accomplish something by working along with somebody who's very different than us. And sometimes it's just funny how, and I see this in my work, where people call me, and you could have somebody describing one situation, somebody the other, and, you know, talking about looking for things to be simple. Wow, if only this guy would have married that woman, and this woman would have married that guy, it would be wonderful. He wants vacation the whole day, she never wants to go. This lady wants to go on vacation all day, and he never wants to go. Wouldn't that be simple? The answer is no. Hashem put them together because he wants this vacation lover to be with the stick in the mud. And he wants this stick in the mud to be with the vacation lover. And that's good for both of them. And they have to work on it, and work along, and love each other, and make things work. I think another important point, just acknowledging all these differences that are there in almost every marriage, is that it's nothing personal. I mean, this therapist said it's not a disorder, it's a personality thing, however you want to talk about it. But I think it's the same with every difference. It's not personal. People get so offended, and they take personal the fact that somebody has a different way of seeing, thinking, feeling, and that's the problem is not the difference, it's how you take it, and you're taking it personal. A woman who's feeling unattractive and wondering why her husband doesn't want to be with her and feeling offended by it, even if she's just taking it on herself and feeling clapped and put down, or if she's getting angry at him, it's so important to remember it's not about you, it's about someone else. If you want to go on a vacation and your wife doesn't want to go with you, it's not personal. It doesn't mean she doesn't like spending time with you. It might, but that's not necessarily what it means. It means she doesn't like vacation as much as you do. And if your husband doesn't like the food that you made, it's also not personal. It's about the food and the way his taste buds work. It's so important to keep on remembering that. It's not personal. Don't take it personal. Don't make it personal. And don't make it interpersonal. And don't make it into a bigger problem than it is. There's another idea that when somebody is doing something wrong, right? If somebody's not fulfilling any obligation, let's call it, that's one. Or if somebody's actually offending you or hurting you, sometimes, just to give some perspective, the bigger the violation and the less excusable, the easier it should be to be able to process and tolerate. I want to explain what that means. Also, just recently somebody called me with a question about somebody, a friend, acquaintance, partner, somebody who really offended him very bad. He helped that person get a job, he helped that person with a certain difficulty they were going through, and he didn't have the decency to call him and let him know. To a point where he heard it back from the street, and like very, very, it was very noticeable that it was completely out of bounds. Completely out of bounds. Forget about the appreciation, just the certain consideration, decency, nothing doing. And he gets very offended by that. How can someone do that to me? Now, if the person really owed you appreciation and should have had the decency to let you know right away, and instead they first told six people, and then they called you, and you know that why that person called the other six people first, and you get offended by that. Okay, so you could think about how to take care of not getting offended and getting over those feelings. But if somebody's clearly being immenschlich, let's call it, right? Somebody's clearly not doing things nicely, and there's something wrong with them, or whatever it is that, you know, however you want to understand it, sometimes it's just easier to say, you know what, this is his problem, not mine. If that's how somebody behaves, if that's how somebody's communicating, if that's how somebody's doing things, then there must be something wrong with them. I don't mean to make them sound like a Arusha, a bad person, but it must be their problem. In other words, you should get more offended when it's not necessarily someone's problem, and you thought you were on the top of the list, now you found out you're not. Okay, so that's a little, you know, it's not it doesn't do much to your ego. It doesn't help you feel good about yourself. But if somebody's clearly being mean to you, putting you down, being abusive, you should know how to be less offended by it, simply because if somebody's behaving abusively, the worse they're behaving, the more unacceptable it is, the less it's about you and the more it's about them. And you can feel for them. It's sad when somebody doesn't have a normal set of skills. My point is just that instead of taking things personally and getting offended, sometimes it's important to remember that it's nothing personal. And sometimes it's important to remember that it is personal and somebody just did something very wrong to you. And the more wrong they are, the more it's about them. And the less somebody's doing what they should be doing, the more it's about them and less about you. So I hope that was clear. I was trying to be a little vague. Not a question that you know, resisting intentionally being together or any kind of healthy, normal, toilet-digger intimacy is never good, not from a man, not from a woman. If it's coming from any kind of intention, you know, to resist what people are supposed to be doing, and people do this, unfortunately, of course, with justifications and excuses and rationalizations, and I'm not going to go into all that, but you know, the Torah is clearly telling us what we should be doing. So if somebody is a little more in the mood than the other, I think that all goes into the category of what we were discussing before, of how we were designed differently. But if somebody's intentionally, of course, nobody's going to say it explicitly, generally, come up with all kinds of excuses, but if somebody knows that I know I should be doing something for my spouse, and I'm not going to do it because I have an agenda, or because I'm trying to get back at you, that's clearly something very wrong. And in general, if somebody's not behaving normally, you might have to go discuss it with someone. I never like going beyond this point in a public shiur, you know, what to do when things should be different. Now, I didn't even get to the question yet, I don't think, right? Some of it, maybe. I think it's fine and important to not communicate your needs. Communicating your needs the right way is not called nagging or being needy. Big mistake. Big mistake. When somebody feels like, I don't want to be naggy, so I'm not going to say what I need. I don't want to sound needy, so I'm not going to say what I really need. That's not called being naggy or needy. Naggy or needy is when you're asking for something that somebody shouldn't necessarily be giving you, right? Someone doesn't have to give you, and you're just nagging, even if someone told you they don't want or they can't or whatever, and you're just not relenting. People do that. People do that. They make someone so crazy till they don't have a choice. That's naggy and needy and very unpleasant. When something is normal and expected and you know, something that's you know, the way things are supposed to be, that's not called naggy and needy. And if somebody tries to make you feel that you're being naggy or needy, that's a problem, right? If a husband's coming home from a day of work and he's expecting to find supper at home and it's not there and he asks for it, and by the third day that this happens in a row, his wife is like, "You're so needy." No, don't fool yourself. Don't let someone tell you that you're being needy if you're not being needy. You're expressing your needs. And if you're going to be afraid to ask, you're going to peek into the kitchen to see if there's some food, and if not, you're going to go quickly buy something because you're afraid to say what you need because you don't want to sound needy or somebody told you that you're being needy, I think that's a mistake. Communication done right about the right topics are not called naggy and not needy. However, they have to be done right, okay? So that's something to think about. I'll try to be brief. The first part of communication is actually saying something. Some people are waiting for the other person to read their minds, or I didn't say it, but I hinted it. You know what I want. You know what I meant to say. You want to say something? Say it. And that's called communicating. Hashem gave us the power of speech for a reason, and we have to use it. Now, of course, you want to communicate things at the right time and the right way. If you're bringing it up when things are tense or when you're emotionally overwhelmed, it might not go over well. If you bring it up in a calm moment, it can go over better. If you schedule time to talk about it, it might go over even better. And the right way is to make sure that what you're saying doesn't sound like you're blaming someone or being critical or forcing someone, and expressing your needs in a way that makes you feel best by putting it on them like you're really doing something wrong. I hope you understand. I don't need this, but you. No. It's not about you. Maybe I'm just taking it wrong. I would really appreciate it. This means a lot to me. And you're assertive and clear about something. There's no reason to shy away and make it sound like, only if you could, I don't really need, you know, I would be nice. But no, you want to be clear and you want to be assertive as long as you're not being challenging. It's important to remember that bottling up feelings and not communicating about them is often just leading to bigger problems. I mentioned in the past the book, a friend of mine, colleague, Yisrael Kleiman, wrote a book, Me and You Equals We, where he talks about the biggest problem in Shalom Bayis is being mevater. Because what happens is somebody keeps on being mevater and keeps on, you know what, it's good, I'm not going to say anything even though it's really, really bothering me. And in the end, you just get more resentful. In the end, it plots it somewhere. In the end, you're waiting for somebody to reciprocate because you're being mevater and it doesn't work. It's important to know how to communicate. So I will end off by saying that you definitely do want to make yourself as attractive as possible. I mean, women in general, and men, everyone should make themselves attractive to the other person, whether it's with kind words or just being nice or whatever else it takes. And it's not a reason to be afraid to say what you need. And, you know, I think that if you say things the right way, the right time, it will be good. So let me just recap. You know, the whole men-women issue when it comes to these things or any other things is usually silly and often inaccurate. And nobody should feel bad about being a man or being a woman or a man feeling like he's a woman or a woman feeling like she's a man. You know, as long as we have needs and we're people and everyone has their own set of whatever they gave us, and that's fine. There is a healthy way of setting things up without getting stuck on who's doing who a favor and who should be more or less or taking personal or whatever. There's a healthy way to do things. And it's a shame when things are set up with a schedule, with a responsible, mature attitude, so many things can be avoided. And like I said, it's suggested listening if you want to hear more about that in class number 8. And yeah, communicating your needs at the right time, the right way, and not being afraid and not just bottling things up or not feeling bad about yourself that you want to say something. I think when I yourself will all get very far. So I hope that Ishik is Azriya Vyolda Zuchar, you know, a little apropos, but to arouse the eager want in someone by communicating nicely and by being attractive and knowing how to say things, that's fine. And if that person doesn't yet want, then again, you express your needs in a way that's actually arousing someone to do something about them. And I hope that I myself will all get across to each other, understand each other, be there for each other, and live together.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.